Welcome to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host, James McDermott, and joining me on the show today is a very special guest. I want to welcome Trey Goodwin to the show. Trey is a former junior World Pan Ams team member. He's a junior national champion, and he spent quite a bit of time back in the day training under Coach Glenn Penley in Wichita Falls Weightlifting Club. And he also has many other experiences and stories to share. I'm super excited to dive deep into Trey's background and hear all about his weightlifting history. Trey, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks a lot, James. Really appreciate you having me on your show.
I know. We've been talking for a while, and you know, I'll tell the story. The way we got in contact was through Glenn's book. You know, I've had a photo of you snatching from back in the day on my computer for years now, because you wrote one of the forewords that's going to be featured in Glenn's book, American Weightlifting, when it comes out in the fall. And I needed to get your permission to use this photo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, you know, unfortunately, Coach Penley passed away, rest in peace. And I wasn't able to get your contact information from him. So I had to go doing a deep dive on Facebook. And I found your mom on there, and I sent her a message, and a couple weeks later, she put us in contact, and now here we are. We've been talking ever since, and you've shared so many things with me that I didn't know about, you know, Glenn or the Wichita Falls days, and so many amazing stories, and I'm just super excited to hear all about that, and also to share it with all the listeners, too.
Yeah, no, that's right. I was super excited when my mom told me that you had reached out, and it's just always so much fun for me to have an opportunity to get to talk about those times back in the day. And I feel so far removed from that world now that I'm 37 and we're talking about, you know, times when I was, you know, in my early 20s. And, you know, but it's always fun to look back and just in our conversations, you know, about Glenn and the past, just, yeah, I appreciate him so much more now that I'm older and have kids of my own, and how much time he invested not only in me, but all the other young guys on our Wichita Falls weightlifting team. Back in the day, he really was a guy that just left it all on the table and gave everything that he could to make us better lifters.
He was certainly one of the most generous persons I've ever met, you know, with just sharing knowledge or sharing, you know, just his resources. I heard so many stories about him inviting lifters just to come stay at his house. You know, you need a place to stay. You can crash on the couch. You know, maybe you do the dishes, maybe you don't, you know, but he would literally do anything to get you into that gym, put a barbell in your hands, and then let you work towards your dreams.
Yep, that's right. I mean, the culture that, you know, he helped create there in Wichita Falls was just, it was just such an interesting deal. We had, you know, when I started out in Wichita Falls, we were all high school kids. And by the time we had graduated high school and the advanced lifters started college there at Midwestern State University, that was when we started seeing Glenn bringing guys in from, you know, he's recruiting from weightlifting clubs across the U.S. and he'd have them come in, and the minute they stepped in that gym and started lifting with all of us and just kind of embraced our culture there, you know, it ended up being great for them, but then also great for all of us Wichita Falls guys, because we got to see some of the best lifters and it made us better.
Yeah, in coaching in general, you know, there are a bunch of different points that you want to be able to check off your box on being capable as a coach. And one of those things is presence and attitude. And I feel like Glenn's presence and attitude in the club or in the room was enormous. He was already a big guy. I mean, he was so tall, so big, but he towered over everyone. And him just being in the room, I can't imagine the training sessions you guys must have had when he's just in the corner, just maybe just stare, walks up behind you or to the side, and you know he's there, you know he's watching. You're going to try so hard on that lift, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and everybody that knows Glenn knows he just had this larger than life. It was just, he was just such a funny guy. And, you know, you're right. He was a big guy, tower. I remember the first time I saw Glenn, you know, it just looked like this big, scary guy, but he's so friendly and just, you know, like I said, just really poured into everybody, but he made the training session so much fun. And we were 16, 17 year old kids, and we would finish our workout. We wouldn't want to leave the gym. We'd sit around and, you know, talk and, you know, cut jokes for 2 hours after workout before we left to go home. So he just his presence and just his bigger than life, you know, attitude. It made it so much fun, and we didn't want to leave it.
I can imagine. And now you have a very interesting story on how you first met Glenn, right? Mm-hmm. Like you met Glenn at your first weightlifting meet. You know, can you tell that story? I remember just being blown away when you told me it.
Yeah. So, I was actually, in Texas, powerlifting is a high school sport. And so I was actually, doing powerlifting. I lived in a small farm town about 30 minutes away from Wichita Falls. And, you know, somebody gave me a flyer, said there was going to be a weightlifting meet in Wichita Falls. And, you know, at that time, I didn't know the difference between powerlifting and weightlifting. I just thought, oh, it's a powerlifting meet. So I put my, you know, knee wraps in the car and had my bench shirt ready to go. And my dad drove me up to the gym, and we walked in there to the Wichita Falls weightlifting club, and was actually told, no, this is not powerlifting. This is weightlifting. And we're gearing up for Junior Olympics qualifier meet. And right now the team's full, and, so really sorry, but, you know, can't have you, here lifting. And so I was really bummed out. Dad and I turned around, started walking out of the gym, and old Bronco pulls up into the parking lot as we're walking out. And, you know, then, you know, pops Glenn, just this huge, scary looking guy. And with a booming voice kind of walks up, and he's like, hey, can I help you? And, we were just like, oh yeah, we came to try out to lift at the powerlifting meet, but, it seems like y'all are full. And he was like, no. He's like, come on back in. We got room for you. And that was just, it was so cool. You know, it just, you know, if we would have been 5 seconds, you know, earlier, I mean, might not have ever had that opportunity to run into Glenn, but he was just so eager to, you know, make room for me and just see what I could do. And, you know, it worked out well for both of us.
Now, at that meet, you had never done probably the snatch or the clean and jerk before. Did he kind of take you under his wing and kind of show you the ropes a little bit in the warm-up room and then threw you out there on the platform? How did the rest of that meet kind of play out?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. I mean, I had never done the snatch before. I had done cleans before, but not the jerk. And so I actually didn't end up lifting at that competition. There was another qualifier that I was able to lift at, but I was still able to just be in the room and watch everybody else lift. And, you know, he put a bar in my hand and showed me, you know, the snatch. And I think the first time I tried to do a snatch, I, you know, ended up flying face first. And it's funny, I watched some of the videos on YouTube. I've seen some from, when he was out Cal Strength, and you got these just huge holes in the walls in the back behind the platform. And it just makes me laugh so hard, because that's exactly what our gym looked like in Wichita Falls, with just, I mean, you walked in there and it just looked like a demolition was going on. Just so many holes in the walls and destruction everywhere, and chalk dust flying and loud music blaring. So it was fun.
there's nothing quite like a gym that has that rustic feel, where everything isn't polished and clean, and there's chalk on the floor and the bar's a little rusty on the ends. There's just something about that.
You walk into a gym like that and you just know immediately, this is a place where I get strong.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
100%. So how did it kind of progress from there? So now you're the team is full, but you're probably like Glenn. See, the great thing about Glenn is in talking to him so many times about it, he had such a soft spot in his heart for youth and junior lifters, you know, and he was, it's probably because, you know, they're fun to work with. And also it's, that's your future. That's the future of the sport. And Glenn was always driving the sport forward on ways to make it better. How did you now transition to being on the team and being a regular at Wichita Falls?
So, you know, it took me a little while to buy into weightlifting. I still, you know, my goal at the time, my dream was to be a state champion in powerlifting. And so I remember having a conversation with Glenn. He was, you know, I really wanted to do the bench press, squat, and deadlift and win a state title in high school. And, you know, weightlifting is not a high school sport. And I didn't know how far, you know, it didn't all make sense to me. And he just told me, look, he's like, if you do what I tell you, I will also show you what you need to know on the squat. There's a different, you know, technique to doing a powerlifting squat versus doing an Olympic lifting squat. He's like, do the workouts I say, and then I'll also help you on the side on powerlifting as well. And, you know, so he showed me, yeah, so I was doing the Olympic weightlifting workouts. At the same time, he was also showing me how to place the bar, you know, properly, lower on my back, on my shoulders. I'm doing powerlifting squats and the whole nine yards. And, you know, ultimately he told me if I did everything he told me to do, then I would, you know, be successful. And I ended up winning, you know, becoming an all-state powerlifter in R2A division in high school and was a state champion. And, you know, so I had, you know, already top, you know, level strength in high school at that age. And we actually had a couple other guys from another town that were high school powerlifters and were also state champions. And you know, Glenn had a powerlifting background, and it worked out perfect from him, because now he's finding these guys that have similar backgrounds to him in powerlifting and have, you know, already a really good core strength that he can convert into weightlifters. And that's what we did. And, you know, I think the hardest thing for me was flexibility. I think at that point in time, I'd just done half squats my whole life, thinking that was a full squat, you know, so I'd already kind of, you know, learned some bad habits and lost some range of motion. So trying to get the flexibility down into the deep squat while also catching overhead snatch, you know, I think those things were, you know, those were tough, but the little milestones, you know, first year hitting 70 kilos on snatch, and then, you know, felt like the next milestone was hitting 100 kilos on snatch. And I just remember trying, you know, time after time to get 100 kilos on snatch. And just the first time I got 100 kilos just felt so great. But, you know, we just, you know, but again, it was the culture. You know, there were probably 15 of us high school kids in the gym at the time, just feeding off of each other, rooting for each other. And then, you know, Glenn, you know, just an enormous presence and coaching each lifter different. It was just, it's just an atmosphere that you don't come across very often.
Yeah. One that will be very difficult to recreate, you know, I imagine in other places. Now, what year is this about when you first joined?
So this would have been right around 1999, 2000 timeframe. Might have been closer to 2000. I believe that would have been my junior year in high school.
So this is a time when, you know, like powerlifting is the state sport, you know, it's in the schools, but weightlifting is so underground at this point. You know, the membership in USA Weightlifting couldn't have been that big, you know. Everyone goes to nationals and you literally know everyone in the federation. Whereas now everyone's just so involved with CrossFit and learning the lifts through other avenues. There's just so many people in the sport now. What was it kind of like being in such a small community back then versus what you're kind of seeing now with just the explosion of the sport in this country?
Yeah, it was, you know, you're right. When we started doing weightlifting there in Wichita Falls, nobody in that area had seen anything like it ever. And, you know, I went into Glenn's, you think about it, I've gone to high school in Electra, the small town, you know, school gets out at, you know, 5, 3:30, then you got your sports at 5. So then I'm driving to Wichita Falls. I'm learning the snatch and clean and jerk lifts that people in the communities have never seen. You know, they've seen them, but never performed to that level. And so now I'm coming back to my high school and we're doing, you know, lifts, you know, just for football or, you know, whatever at high school. And I remember doing a full squat clean. And my coach, you know, not knowing really that much about Olympic lifting, told me I was doing my cleans wrong because, you know, he said that, you know, I'm supposed to be doing cleans and not squats. And so it just, you know, it just.
Wow, that's amazing.
It just, you know, they just didn't know that that's what it was supposed to look like. And so it was definitely an interesting time. But, you know, going to our first meet, which was that Junior Olympics, you know, I remember seeing, I think it was Jeff Whitmer. And I don't know if you've seen many videos of Jeff Whitmer. He was still a school age at the time. So I think he had 1 year left at school age. And I just remember watching him lift. And the first time I saw him lift and just how flawless his technique was. And, you know, he obviously won the competition, you know, for his age group. And he was just so flexible. I think he even missed a lift because his, you know, as he caught his snatch, you know, his butt hit the ground and then he popped back up and, you know, they red lighted for him. I'd never seen somebody that flexible that they were able to get that low to miss a lift. But when you see lifters like that lifting at another level, it just makes you want more and makes you, you know, I'm not going to stop until I can lift like that guy can. And, you know, but yeah, the CrossFit has just been such great, you know, it's been great for Olympic weightlifting. It really has, because back then nobody had platforms. Nobody had, you know, the barbell that fits in your hand. I mean, if you went into a gym and you wanted to do snatch and clean and jerk back then, the barbells were huge bars and you probably know more about the size, but they were, you know, I mean, I have smaller hands. I could barely get my hand around, you know.
Is it like a squat bar?
Right. Yeah. Like a squat bar. And so you couldn't even do a hook grip on the bar really. So, but it was hard to find the right equipment if you were outside of your home gym. Whereas now there's CrossFits. It feels like at every corner and you want to get a good workout in, you could pop in anywhere and pay a lift fee or buy a t-shirt and they'll, you know, let you lift. So,
yeah, we're super fortunate now to have that. I can't imagine, you know, I've been to some gyms who have those thicker bars, those squat bars. They feel great when it's on your back.
Yeah,
you're gonna do right. Squats with it. But, you know, I have small hands too. I can't imagine, you know, trying to hook grip on that thing and trusting myself to do some snatches with it. What were some of your first impressions? So at that meet where Glenn invites you back in, he puts a bar in your hands, you know, you're working on a couple things, but then you see people doing mm-hmm. snatches and jerks for the first time. What was going through your head when you see someone just doing that and getting a full depth snatch so fast, so crisp?
It looked like an athletic movement. And I'd remembered somebody told me once that the more you could clean and jerk, the harder you could hit football. And, you know, when I watch these guys do these lifts properly, it just really, you know, to me, it just said, you know, when you're comparing it to, you know, like a bench press, for example, I mean, you know, you get so jacked up and, you know, you'd have your headphones on and you get all pumped up and then you lay down on this bench with a bench shirt on and, you know, you do a lift that lasts like 1 second, touch your chest and come up and that's it. And then to watch a snatch or a clean and jerk, it's a full body movement and just, it's just an athletic movement. And it takes an athlete, you know, to have the flexibility, to have the strength all around to be able to do a lift like that. And I could tell right away that if I stuck with this and practiced and did these lifts, I would be so much more explosive and so much more athletic than just doing half squats and, you know, bench press and deadlift.
It was fate that you showed up to that event and you met Glenn in the parking lot And, you know, he took you under his wing, and the rest is kind of history. Right after that, you're training with Wichita Falls, you know, weightlifting team. And that was kind of like a who's who of weightlifting at any given time. You know, Caleb Ward, Donnie was there, Donnie Schenkel, Moppy, Jacob, just so many people, you know. Like, so talk about some of your experiences with those people and what it was like to be in that group, and, you know, and seeing people doing amazing things.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, so when I started lifting there, we had probably 7 lifters, you know, at the time, and then it grew pretty quick, you know, over just probably a month into about 15 to 20 guys. But, you know, I remember Caleb Ward, you know, his older brother was my age, and his name was Josh Ward. And so he lifted probably for about a year before he had kind of, you know, gotten into some other sports and that kind of thing. And, but Caleb stuck with it, and, you know, Caleb was probably 10 or 11 years old at the time. So when we were lifting heavy, Caleb was like the little kid in the gym that, you know, we're scared to drop our snatch because this little kid might run under it, you know? And so that's kind of where, you know, how old Caleb was, but, you know, it was fun to watch him. You know, I just couldn't imagine being a kid like that at 10 years old in this gym with Glenn and just everybody else that was in there, and just be able to watch, you know, everybody's lifts, learn from their mistakes over years. And, you know, it just, it didn't surprise me to see how successful he ended up being later in his career. And then, you know, like I was talking about earlier, when us high school guys got to college, Glenn was reaching out to coaches across the country, and we would have lifters come in, you know, that he was kind of recruiting just to get in our gym and just see if it was the right fit for him, you know. And a lot of lifters, it wasn't. I remember there were some really good national caliber lifters that would come into our gym, live there for a couple of months, and it just didn't work out. But, you know, I remember being in the gym one day and he said, "Hey, I got a call from Mike Bergner out in California, and he's got a lifter over there. He's a Marine. And, you know, we've been talking about it. We really think that he would fit the culture over here in Wichita Falls. So he's going to come over here and lift with us for a while." And, you know, then in walks, you know, Donnie Schenkel, and, you know, and, you know, I just remember, you know, we'd seen some of these lifters come in and not work out, but.
Oh, lost you for a second there. You still hear me?
Is, you know, go from snatching 100 kilos to, you know, 140 kilos, you know, pretty quick within, you know, just like a year or so. It was pretty impressive. And, you know, and then I know once Glenn left Wichita Falls, Donnie, you know, followed him, you know, and just ended up having a really great, successful career. So it's really fun to kind of see that and see how everything transpired.
What are some of the biggest, most memorable lifts that you remember from training or even from competition with the team? I'm sure you've seen some epic lifts, you know, training with Donnie and Caleb and other people.
Yeah. No, we had one guy that, you know, was a great lifter, and he ended up, you know, also competing at the 2004 Olympic trials. And a lot of folks back in the day remember this guy because he had just this enormous fro on the top of his head. But his name was Benjamin Preda. And he liked to do, and I think he watched some of the, you know, some old Greek weightlifting videos, and you know, he wanted to do a squat jerk. And, you know, so I think we saw him in the gym, and I think Glenn had a picture of it, and I don't know that I've seen it since, but, you know, I think he did a 170 kilo, you know, squat jerk, and it was pretty impressive lift. And, you know, everybody had been doing split jerks in the gym, and so to see him do that was pretty impressive.
That's incredible. So was that with a clean, or was that off the blocks?
That was on the clean. So he had cleaned 170 kilos, done a squat jerk with it, and and he was a 105 kilo lifter. So I think that was a really good weight for him. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I can't remember what he did in the 04 Olympic trials, but, you know, it was right around that type of weight. But wow. We had several guys, you know, Josh Wells was another one that was also an 85 kilo lifter with me. And, you know, early on, I know Josh and I were, you know, really competing with each other for that top spot at Wichita Falls weightlifting in that weightlifting category. And he also competed at the 04 Olympic trials. So we had several guys that, you know, Glenn brought up from the high school age into college, and, you know, at the college age, we're all competing at the 04 Olympic trials. So kids that had never done a snatch and clean and jerk before, you know, from 2000 to 4 years later in 2004, all of us are, you know, everybody that stuck with it is national level, you know, competitors. So it happened really fast. But, you know, like you said earlier, it's kind of like walking into it, just being at the right place at the right time. None of us knew at the time that, you know, Glenn was going to be one of the best weightlifting coaches in U.S. history. You know, we walk into this hole in the wall gym in Wichita Falls, and we have one of the greatest minds in weightlifting in there. I mean, who would have known? But that's just a testament to these kids that had the drive, and then, you know, he believed in us and gave us everything he did and poured into us. And, you know, within a matter of 3 years, we're all national level lifters. Pretty cool.
Well, definitely. That's and that's not a whole lot of time either. It's just 4 years to just rise up through the ranks and accomplish what you guys did is phenomenal. What was it like going to meets with Glenn? What was the dynamic in the warm-up room? You know, how is he coaching you in the back? How did that all play out?
Yeah, going to the meets with Glenn was, you know, we drove everywhere. And, you know, I know that once, you know, that first year was over, once we kind of entered year two, you know, we'd gone from local competitions to competing at the Junior Olympics, and now we're driving from Wichita Falls to Arizona, or we're driving from Wichita Falls to Kansas, or Wichita Falls to Florida. And, you know, Glenn would rent a van and have, you know, a bunch of high school, you know, or, you know, early college age kids in the van with them. So you can just imagine the conversations that we had. And, you know, Glenn was just one of these guys that just, you know, we used to play a game where, you know, he was just like, ask me anything, and, you know, I'm going to be able to tell you. You know, you could ask him, you know, Glenn, why, you know, do you believe UFOs are real? You know, and he would just give you some scientific argument as to why UFOs were, you know, real, you know, and it just, you know, he seemed so believable. And it was just, you know, it was a lot of fun, but he made the trips a lot of fun. And, you know, I feel like one thing with Wichita Falls, all of our lifters, we were always cutting weight for competition. And maybe it was just because a lot of us had done it for powerlifting before, you know, but Glenn would be, you know, helping us with nutrition and just, you know, how to, you know, go on a low carb, you know, before even the keto diets or the Atkins diets or any of these diets became a big thing, Glenn was already having us do, you know, those exact low carb diets, you know, for weightlifting. And just, you know, just already ahead of himself. And, you know, we get to competitions and he'd have, you know, exactly what we needed to do once we weighed in, what we needed to take in our bodies, you know, so that we were, you know, ready to go a couple hours later for a competition. You know, he always had everything just kind of programmed out. He was very organized. He had somebody that was ready to count attempts for us in the back. He was back there coaching, watching, you know, attempts as well. But then we also had loaders, you know, so that the person that's lifting didn't have to, you know, do any, but, you know, because he coached us in every practice and knew exactly what our lifts were and what we were doing, you know, it wasn't like a vetting session where we had to talk through what our opener attempts would be and that kind of thing. He already had it planned out in the warmups, what weights we would hit, when we would hit them. And it was just a really seamless process.
Now, I can't imagine with, you know, like you have to cut for meets, get ready for them, you know, and make sure you're prepared for that. In training, I imagine Glenn was all about eating food, right?
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was all about eating food. And, you know, I mean, he really wouldn't tell us to start, you know, really cutting until you maybe started getting into that next to the week up to competition, just depending how much you overdid it. You know, it might take, you know, a few days. I think I was 20 pounds overweight one time, and this was going up to the junior Pan Ams in Puerto Rico, and I had to start pretty early on that one. And I remember, you know, being in Puerto Rico in summer, it was so hot outside. Glenn had me in a black trash bag, you know, running out, you know, running around, you know, trying to get the sweat going, and, you know, then had a hot shower for me to get in. And, you know, he practically had to carry me to the weigh-in because I just had no energy, you know, left. But, you know, he had the Gatorade ready for me, he had the water ready for me. And, you know, we went and grabbed a bite and, you know, had a good meet there in Puerto Rico. So
that's the benefits of having a very large man as your coach. You just exactly pick right. You up and walk you around to the weigh-in.
Yep, that's right. You know, he really did. I mean, he carried me, you know, into the weigh-in area. So it was pretty funny. I was pretty dehydrated at the time.
I can't imagine. How did the rest of that meet go?
It was good. You know, I got to lift in Puerto Rico twice, and both times were great. And it was, you know, it's an interesting experience getting to train somewhere or lift somewhere other than the U.S. because you have other elements that you have to factor in, and you don't really think about them until you get there. But I mean, it was hot in Puerto Rico, and, you know, some of the areas, you know, you didn't have central air conditioning, and they're just these little things that you don't really think about. You're back there in the warm-up area and you're like, wow, you know, when we lift in the hotel, you know, it's almost cold, you know, but here I am and it feels like I'm lifting in a barn. And, you know, of course it's almost like home field advantage, really. It's there, you know, lifters are acclimated and lifting that heat every day probably. And then you have lifters that come out there and aren't used to those elements, and it makes it tough.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, we get a little used to, you know, our own home field advantage, you know, as you say, got the AC on, you know, or just like your spot in the gym where you like to lift your bar. And then when you go to another country, it's just a rude awakening sometimes on how other places are.
Yep.
Let's rewind a little bit to the Olympic trials. How did that meet go? What did you accomplish there? Who was involved, and how did the whole coaching dynamic go down on just taking attempts and pushing the needle forward at that meet?
Yeah. So, you know, so by the time the Olympic trials had rolled around in 2004, I had moved from Wichita Falls to the Olympic Training Center. And, you know, so, you know, I think, you know, right when I got to the Olympic Training Center, you know, I am, you know, at the peak of my weightlifting career at the time. And I had Dragomir Trozlan, who's a great coach there at the OTC. And I know he worked well with the other coaches of the other lifters. And so he would communicate with Glenn and really make sure that I had, you know, the workouts I needed and that kind of thing, but at the same time, putting his spin on, and I learned a lot from him as well. And, you know, so up until the Olympic trials, you know, I had, you know, really started peaking every meet up until then. I was hitting max lifts, max BRs. And then I got to the 04 trials and I want to say it was the first time I had ever bombed out. I hit a 140 snatch, and then I'm trying to remember what my opening attempt was on clean and jerk, but
I want to say 165.
I think you're right. I think it was 165, and And I couldn't hit the 165 lift. And from that meet forward, I would continue to struggle in my cleans until I left the training center in 05. And so, you know, I just, when I caught the clean, I just remember that I was catching it forward and my back would round and I couldn't stand up with the lift. And, you know, Dragomir, you know, so that was the 04 trials. You know, Shane Hammond was my roommate at the training center, would go on to the Olympics. Dragomir would retire after 04, so didn't really get a chance to work with him on, you know, what might have happened there. Paul Fleschler came in as the new OTC coach out there and continued to struggle on the cleans. And then I ended up, you know, hanging it up in 2005 and leaving the training center and going back home to get my college degree. And I went to they had a Velocity Sports Performance Center in Tulsa. And I go into this athletic center and I'm watching these guys run 40s and they've got a video camera set up and, you know, it's this dart fish analysis and it reminded me of, you know, some of the things we had at the training center. So I had them hook it up to the platform so that I could watch my cleans back. And I noticed that when I was pulling on my cleans, I was throwing instead of keeping my head, you know, kind of straight, I was throwing it back too far. So it's causing me to jump backwards about maybe 2 or 3 inches. And so that the weight's still going, you know, straight up and down, but because I was jumping back 2 or 3 inches, that's why I was catching the weight forward and rounding my back. So then once I started training on, you know, just, you know, keeping my head in there, you know, then I was able to compete. I think it was those 06 collegiate nationals. And, you know, I can't remember if I hit 170 or 175 in that competition. But you know, once I was able to see it, you know, you can't see some of these things with the naked eye. You really have to watch it on video to see what you're doing wrong. You know, once I was able to tweak it and work with Glenn remotely on what to do to fix it, you know, I was able to get the cleaning shirt back on me and under me. And it was either 2006 or 2007, collegiate national champion. And I attempted an American record on the snatch. I think it was 146 kilograms. And it kind of surprised myself when I caught it overhead. And then as I was standing up, lost it behind me. You know, ended up qualifying for the 2008 Olympic trials as well. So just never really gave up, but that 04 Olympic trials, you know, that catching that clean the wrong way, you know, it's funny, you get into these funks in weightlifting and you know, you just can't give up. You just got to keep tweaking it and working on it, and eventually you'll crack the code.
Yeah, it just takes a lot of trial and error. You had a little peristemos head whip going on there for a while.
Yeah.
Now, do you think, you know, in contrasting Glenn's coaching versus Dragomir's coaching, you know, I've heard stories of the OTC back in the day being more about technique and not really pushing strength or doing strength lifts versus Glenn is all about the strength, you know, like you're going to squat and do pulls and presses and things like that. Do you think some of that change in programming had anything to do with it?
You know, I think, you know, it's interesting. You know, when I look at somebody like Dragomir, you know, he's a bronze medalist in the Olympics. And, you know, that's what I loved about him as a coach is like, you know, this is just some guy that's just a good coach. You know, this guy, he did it, you know, he went to the Olympics and won a bronze medal. So something, you know, already is special about this guy. And, you know, when you see Dragomir, he is not a big guy. I mean, he's, you know, he's just a smaller guy, but he had a very good technical eye. And I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, his philosophy, but I think he also believed that, you know, to to be an Olympic athlete is just that, it's to be an athlete. And, you know, whether you're doing weightlifting or volleyball or wrestling or tennis, whatever it is, if you want to be the best in the world, then you're going to be an athlete. You're not just going to be a strong guy that's not flexible. You're going to be an athlete. And so I think he wanted you to perform the lifts with the best technique that you possibly could, with the highest strength that you could possibly have. And, you know, being an athlete, you look at Shane Hammond, you know, he's, you know, about 5'10" and, you know, weighs 350 pounds and can do a standing backflip and dunk a basketball. I mean, that's incredible. He could dunk a basketball. And that's,
oh my gosh.
And that's the definition of an athlete. And sure, he had amazing strength, but you know, when he got to the training center, it was what he needed. Cause Shane was also a power lifter that converted to weightlifting. And it wasn't like when he was at the Olympic Training Center, he continued to focus on making PRs in squats and making PRs in bench press. You know, he was already as strong as he needed to be. He just needed to learn the techniques and just refine those movements. And I see other kids too. I think, you know, one of the other lifters that today that, you know, is a phenomenon is this, you know, CJ Cummings. And, you know, when I watch, you know, this kid and he's, you know, I think I've seen a video from when he was maybe 11 or 12 years old and he's snatching and clean and jerking more than I did when I was in my peak. You know, I was a Texas high school all-state power lifter, you know, and, you know, you're telling me that this 11-year-old kid is stronger than me. He was like, no, I know that he's not, but he's able to put his body in a better position. His technique is flawless. And, you know, it does, you know, sometimes you just don't have to be, you know, the strongest person. So I think you got to have both. You got to be strong, but it doesn't matter if you're strong, if you can't be flexible and, you know, be quick and do a lift fast. So you got to
be efficient
in all those worlds. Yeah.
No, I agree. That makes perfect sense. Well, I can't imagine you go to the OTC and you go to your dorm assignment and you open the door and there's Shane Hammond in there, you know, as your roommate. And I've heard stories that he's told on interviews that he's done in the past where he talked about when he got to the OTC, he just worked with a PVC pipe or just a dowel for like months on end. And I think that's a testament to him being a champion, the patience he had as well to kind of do that. Cause I've seen him do crazy heavy squats, you know, from powerlifting and other things. And he's one of the strongest people in the world. I imagine if he can dunk and do a standing backflip, he's probably one of those guys where like, let's say if like he was walking on the street with someone and someone snatched an old lady's purse, and you don't think that guy's going to catch you. Right.
Yeah.
But then the next thing you know, he's like right on your ass, you know,
yes.
Not only
yes.
is he going to catch you, but he's going to pick you up, you know? Yeah. And so I imagine he has terrifying speed. What was it walking into the dorm and there's Shane Hammond and he's like, hey, I'm your roomie.
You know, it was very surreal for me, you know, coming from, you know, small farm town outside of Wichita Falls. And, you know, I remember, you know, being with the Wichita Falls weightlifting guys and, you know, we all got together in 2000 when the Sydney Olympics come on and we're all starting to just get into weightlifting. And, you know, we watched the weightlifting with Glenn and we watched Shane lift. And, you know, this is our, you know, this guy is the face of Olympic lifting. This is, you know, just, you know, in our minds, the biggest celebrity, you know, for the sport. And to be able to move out to the Olympic Training Center and then to walk in and have him as a roommate. I mean, it was, you know, I was starstruck, you know, for a while and not just for Ben, for everybody. You know, when I was at the training center, you know, Paulo Ono was there and, you know, Jeremy Bloom, who was the punt returner from, you know, the University of Colorado, was also an Olympic skier, was coming in and, you know, we'd be walking from the cafeteria to, you know, our gym through a different fitness center. And, you know, you'd have Apollo and Jeremy Bloom in there training with each other. And, you know, I'd go to lunch and sit down with Shane and, you know, Rulon Gardner would come in and sit down with us and talk and just, you know, it was just, it was, I never would have thought that I would, you know, have that opportunity to get to be in a place that cool and around, you know, so many of those athletes.
Was Mark Henry there as well?
He wasn't there at that time. So, you know, I think, you know, 2000, this was, you know, so 2000 was the year that Rulon beat the, you know, reigning like four-time, you know, wrestling champ from Russia, and Apollo just won his first, you know, speed skating Olympics and in 2000 as well. So I think it was kind of right after Mark Henry's, but everybody had some really good Mark Henry stories when I got there. And so his legacy was definitely still alive there.
I can imagine it probably still is, you know, I mean, the OTC is not open now, but everyone probably still talks about all those old stories. What kind of things did you learn from Shane? Like, here you are with such an incredible strength athlete. You're rooming together. I imagine you guys talked all the time and you were able to pick his brain about countless things.
Yeah, no. And, you know, so I think, you know, the biggest thing with Shane right off the bat that we shared in common is that we were both Christians, and, you know, so we shared that value. And so we talked about God a lot and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I think right off the bat, we got along really well and became great friends. And so then we were, you know, going out to eat together. And, you know, my wife, Lindsay, now, we were dating at the time. She's also from Wichita Falls. She ended up moving out to Colorado Springs and getting an apartment out there while I was living there. And so, you know, she got to hang out with Shane as well. And, you know, we were kind of like the three amigos outside a training, and you know, we just made it fun, you know, in between workouts and after workouts, because we were there so much of the time and lifting, we needed to do something fun to, you know, just to, you know, be able to relax. And so, you know, we, you know, just find, you know, some kind of event to go to or that kind of thing. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that I learned from Shane at the time, and again, this is before CrossFit, you know, really gets going, is that, you know, weightlifting, it just, it's a sport that it, you know, we needed help. And, you know, here's Shane, you know, the face of, you know, Olympic weightlifting. And, you know, now we're talking about 2004, you know, I'm not sure how much longer he's got in the sport, if he's going to go for, you know, another Olympics in 2008, but I know he's, you know, starting to think retirement at the time. And, you know, I'm still college age, and I've really kind of put my college career on hold, you know, as I'm training at the Olympic. So I kind of stuck with the question, you know, is, do I, you know, stay here and continue to devote the next 10 years of my life, you know, doing Olympic lifting and put college on hold? Or, you know, nobody would have been able to foresee what, you know, CrossFit would have brought to the table and how good, you know, it would be for the sport. But I just remember at the time thinking, you know, Shane's, you know, a phenomenon. He's gone to the Olympics, you know, he's, you know, done motivational speaking, you know, he's going to be able to have a career after this. But let's say I don't go to the Olympics, or let's say that I, you know, go to the Olympics and I don't medal. How am I going to be able to, you know, what am I going to be able to do with that, to be able to, you know, provide for my family and to make, you know, to make ends meet and that kind of thing. And so I think that part of it was just, you know, I don't know whether I need to stay here and do this for the next 10 years or, you know, just kind of, you know, put weightlifting on the back burner and start, you know, focusing on school and career after weightlifting. And so I think ultimately, you know, that's what I did. But of course, CrossFit, you know, has come in and been so, so great for the sport that I have no doubt that if I would have, you know, gone the other way and stayed lifting, you know, for the next 10 years, I could have had a really good career, you know, doing something else.
It's a tough decision for an athlete to make, you know, it's like thinking about the future. And luckily now I believe, you know, more is being done to set athletes up for when they're done lifting. You know, I imagine like CJ Cummings has a plan, and USA Weightlifting's probably helping with that a little bit. And education's got to be a big part about it, you know, because not everyone's going to stay in the sport and coach and whatnot, but you have to have something to fall back on. Super important. Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, everybody can remember the guys that, you know, got to get up on the podium at the Olympic Games. Everybody remembers the guy that won the gold or won the silver in the Olympics. But what about the other guys that, you know, made the Olympic team and, you know, maybe they weren't in the final heat, right? But they're still Olympians, but we probably don't even know what their names are. And, you know, have those guys also put, you know, other things on hold. And, you know, you know, it's great to achieve your dream and that kind of thing. But, you know, at the same time, you know, even the Olympians like Shane, it's, you know, at a certain point you become irrelevant and, you know, people remember things about you, but, you know, it's not like you're, you know, continuing to be in commercials with Powerade or, you know, continue to line up all those motivational speeches. And so it is just like you said, it's so important to have, you know, a backup plan, you know, while you're going through that.
Yeah. And I know you're good friends with him. Do you think he'll ever make a comeback on the master scene and just set all the records and just dominate?
You know, I was joking around with him about that a couple of weeks ago. I called him and told him I was getting back in to lifting on the master's level, and I told him that, you know, he should come in and as a super heavyweight again. And, you know, we just, you know, I think he loves talking about lifting and I don't know if he would. You know, and he's super busy. You know, we're both in the oil and gas industry, and you know, he's super busy with his career, and he's had a very successful career in the oil and gas industry, and he's got you know, several kids now, and his wife Kristen, they live there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he is you know, I know he's a super busy guy, but he still loves to lift. I think if I can continue to work on him and persuade him and convince him, I think ultimately, you know, we could get him back on board.
It almost reminds me of like the whole Mike Tyson situation going on right now, where Mike Tyson said that he wouldn't make a comeback, and people asked him, well, do you still work out? Do you still like hit the bag? And he's like, no, I can't do that, because if I do, it's going to reignite a whole thing, you know, and I'll just be drawn back into it. I imagine like for Shane, getting that bar back in his hands and adding some kilos here and there, and then that old feeling starts to come back, or maybe he pops up at a weightlifting meet or even does a local meet, like the floodgates would be open, and it'd just be like that. All of a sudden that champion just comes by. Like right now he's like in a dormant state, but it probably wouldn't take a whole lot, you know, like especially when he sees you with your singlet on and hitting lifts and doing stuff and training, you know, that might spark it.
Oh yeah. No, it's you know, I think he loves, and their daughter Ember is 10 years old, and she's really involved in gymnastics, and you know, she is a phenomenon. And I know that she's competing in a lot of national events on the gymnastics level, and they come to Frisco where I live, right outside of Dallas, and they'll come to competitions around the Dallas area and then all through Oklahoma and different places, and she's winning a lot of them, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw her stepping into her father's shoes there someday as an Olympic gymnast. But I know that you know, they're still involved with just, you know just USA Olympic athletics, and just, you know, he still loves it. And I know, you know, he has a special place in his heart for weightlifting for sure.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you can't get any luckier with the gene pool when your dad is 350 pounds and he can do a dunk on the basketball or do a standing backflip. You're probably definitely going to be a phenomenal gymnast if that's the case.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Thank you so much for listening to The Barbell Strikes Back. That was part one of my interview with Trey Goodwin. Part two is going to be posted on Wednesday, so be sure to tune in to listen to the rest of this amazing interview. Thank you so much again for listening. Head on over to Instagram and follow The Barbell Strikes Back. Follow me, James A. McDermott. Make sure you go to iTunes and Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review and some positive feedback. Again, thank you so much for listening, and be sure to check out part two of this amazing interview on Wednesday.